This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Later on Building Bridges, the debate within the AFL-CIO over the future of the labor movement. Does either side get it right? With veteran labor correspondent Harry Kolba.
But first,
a commentary by Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Why Social Security's fall is near. I've written on this subject several years ago, and I'm not really pleased to be doing it again, but I must say what I see. Unless I miss my guess, the days of Social Security are numbered. The neo-Malthusian dream of an ownership society that comes from the White House, united with the chronic betrayal that is at the core of the Democratic Party, spells a reform of the nation's Social Security system that is the seed of its very destruction. It's been said that both major political parties are but two ends of one reigning corporatist party. And there is some truth in this. As ever, however, there are degrees of truth. One party is the open servant of capital. The other is a kind of backroom valet. Both serve their interests. It's just a matter of how fervently and how openly. The corporate takeovers and consolidation of major media furthers this trend and reinforces the emptiness of U.S. democracy. The Republicans, since their betrayal of black freedmen during Reconstruction, have carried the water of Wall Street. The Democrats, which began as a pro-slavery white supremacist party, has never truly come to terms with the central contradictions of its beginnings and its subsequent morphing into a party that claims to represent black and working class interests in the never-ending struggle to represent these two inconsistent interests. The Democrats have opted to go down the middle to the money bags of Wall Street, and as ever, money runs the show. When it comes to Social Security, Wall Street is drooling like a lecher at a girl's high school. They see billions of new dollars, nay, trillions, being pumped into the stock market to fuel corporate growth and executive profit. It is a dream come true for the market and at the top of their wish list. For the poor, the working class, for those who fought for these things in the early years of the 20th century, it is a nightmare. Social Security was won after hard and bloody struggles, after the stock market crash of 1929 and the Great Depression that followed. People marched, they demonstrated. There were rent riots, food riots, sit-ins, and mass protests. Using anti-government rhetoric and the age-old appeal to greed, the corporatists in the White House and Congress are getting ready to pull the rug out from under generations of young people with promises of stock wealth that may, like the morning dew, evaporate. What is utterly amazing is that the same administration that brought us the economic disaster of Enron is selling a plan that makes Enron look like child's play. An ownership society means that those who can pay for it own it. Those who cannot get nothing. This is but the latest attempt by the corporatists to create the social and economic conditions where workers have no say in how they will live after their productive years have passed. This is the creation of social insecurity. Social movements brought Social Security into existence. It is only social movements that will build a wall around it and build further ramparts for more and more people who live on the periphery of capital. It is past time to build grassroots popular movements that speak to our real survival needs in this cruel age of globalism. The Democrats have proven that they cannot and will not fight for those social gains. If it becomes a choice of betraying those millions who voted for them and those few who paid them millions to represent Wall Street, there really isn't any choice. They'll always follow the money. Betrayed in war, betrayed in peace, what is there to expect but more betrayal? From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
Well, you were listening to the renowned journalist on Philadelphia's death row since 1981, Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Children need schools more than they need jails, and that's where our society fails. First 7 years creates a child's foundation, mandatory for a healthy nation. And we're fired up, ain't gonna take it no more. We're tied up,
ain't gonna take it no more. You say cool down, we say step down. You're breaking my mother's heart. Shame, shame. How could we forget that the children come first? We left them alone and they died of thirst. Mothers and fathers confused and forlorn. And when the children are missing, well, there's something wrong. We're fired up, ain't gonna take it no more. Tied up, ain't gonna take it no more. You say cool down, we say step down. You're breaking my mother's heart. Shame, shame. Can't just focus on the kids with wealth. Can't pick and choose who gets the health care. Take another look at the great divide. Love's dangerously similar to genocide. We're fired up, ain't gonna take it no more. Tied up, ain't gonna take it no more. You say cool down, say step down, you're breaking my mother's heart. Fired up, ain't gonna take it no more. Tied up, ain't gonna take it no more. You say cool down, we say step down, you're breaking my mother's heart. Shame, shame, ain't gonna take it no more. Tied up, ain't gonna take it no more. You say cool down, we say step down, you break another mother's heart.
Break another heart.
Harry Kelba is publisher of The Labor Educator, and he has been somebody whom I have seen for years and years and years, who has persevered to have a democratic, meaningful, organized labor movement that we absolutely need as workers, but a labor movement that is representative of the rank and file and the working class. And he has just returned from the AFL-CIO Executive Committee. And we're going to find out what happened there and what we should be enthusiastic about and what are some of the problems. And indeed, what were the proposals and issues that provoked this extraordinary meeting of the organized labor movement's hierarchy in Las Vegas. And welcome to WBAI.
About this 3-day meeting in Las Vegas, this is a meeting of the Executive Council. Now, I think I should prelude this with a couple of comments. Until 2 years ago, the AFL-CIO leadership didn't recognize that there was a crisis in the labor movement. And I want to credit Andy Stern as serving as a catalyst.
From SEIU? And bringing,
yes, from mm-hmm. the Service Employees Union, and bringing this matter to the attention of all the labor leaders and to the rank and file. One of the peculiar, unusual things that happened, and this may be very important later on, is that Sweeney, AFL-CIO President John Sweeney, in response to Stern's comments, started a forum in which he encouraged not only top leaders, but rank and filers, labor activists, individuals, to say what the labor movement needs to do to revive and to revitalize itself. He had 10 years to try to figure that out, but apparently he didn't, and so we were in a crisis. In response, 16 international unions sent in pages and pages of suggestions. 35 state and central labor councils wrote in pages and pages of individuals. As a matter of fact, I, who have been classified as a dissident, got myself on this forum, which was remarkable. Anyway, that's the prelude to things. And they assembled in Las Vegas, and the hope was that here they would deal and grapple with the real problems confronting working people. Unfortunately, those 3 days were mostly spent on talk about money. How much money could they take from the AFL-CIO for union organizing or political and legislative activities? James Hoffa, the president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, came forward with a proposal that 50% of all the money that is contributed to the AFL-CIO should be returned to the international unions for the purpose of organizing. There was a debate in the executive committee, and it was turned down by a vote of 15-7. Now, I should tell you who the seven were, and I'll give you some idea who the 15 were. The seven consisted of Hoffa, Stern, the people who were part of the New Unity Partnership, the Labor's president, Terence O'Sullivan, the people from the United Food and Commercial Workers, and Unite Here, you know, the two people from the garment, apparel, and hotel. And there was a merger of those two unions. So that was a minority, and they vowed to continue the fight right to the convention.
Well, let me ask you, because I'm not sure people follow that intimately, who these people even are. The question really is, what is even the significance of that, in your opinion?
Well, the significance of that is that it's a first round in a battle for the leadership of the AFL-CIO. Stern and his group figured that they could win it, and if they had won that thing, the Sweeney forces would have been in disarray, and they could have moved ahead and nominate their man for the at the convention. And their man was the fellow from the John Wilhelm from the hotel catering and gambling union.
Well, what's the significance of that? Like, why should somebody care if it's Wilhelm or Sweeney or Hoffa or Stern? What does this all amount to?
Well, that's a good question. What does it all amount to? Well, it's a question of what they will do when in office. There were differences of opinion as to how to structure the AFL-CIO, what leadership policy should be pursued, what about the political activities, how the public relations program should be carried out, and a number of other things. Very important.
Harold, let me just phrase it in a different way. The Stern forces want to throw more money at organizing. The Sweeney forces want to throw more money at political activity. In your view, does either of these proposals do anything to revive the labor movement?
Right. Well, first of all, in to answer your question, I would say almost categorically, nothing. For this reason, there was no reason to explain why they needed the money and that they would be doing something different. You know, the Teamsters, for example, for 3 years tried to organize a big transportation company, failed, and had to announce an end to the strike. Unite people had for 2 years tried to organize Cintas, the uniform, rental uniform people, a company that has 300 plants, and couldn't do it. To put it in a nutshell, the AFL-CIO has not been able in the past two or three decades to organize any company with 15,000 or more people.
Is it about form over substance that was being debated? No, I mean, what is your assessment why these organizing efforts failed?
They fail for three reasons, in my opinion. First, they do not have competent organizers. They are patsies for the consultants who are hired by the major corporations. I know that because I taught classes of union leaders, and they couldn't answer the questions that the consultants posed them. I posed as an employer, and then I posed as a rank and file, and I beat them every time. So they have to change. They have to have really make organizers effective, trained. They shouldn't be treated as 3-day graduates of the organizing institute. Many of them don't get much more training than 3 days, and then they're sent out into the field.
Well, what about the rank and file? Did they play any role whatsoever?
Well, coming to that. The rank and file play very little role. My point is, that's the second point that I would make. In order to organize large numbers of people, you need volunteer people who have been there. In other words, as I've said before many times, the 13 million or 12.5 million people, members of the AFL-CIO, are really the most precious asset of the labor movement. You can make labor activists out of them with the right approach. Those are the people who can organize their fellow workers in the various occupations and industries. Not hirelings from outside, you know, getting smart college students and salesmen. So it can't be done. That's the second point. The third point is you have to reach out to the unorganized. The AFL-CIO has no program at all for that. They do not have a national radio program, a national TV program. They don't put out anything. They're marginalized. They don't talk to the millions of workers out there. And what they need to do is to, and if you can't reach out to see these workers, if you can't talk to them, how are you going to organize them? We talk about 50 million workers who say they want a union. The AFL-CIO keeps on repeating that. Who are they? How are you going to get them if you don't approach them at all? If there's no medium to reach out to them. And they could have, for example, in this last election. It was a wonderful opportunity. While they're talking about Kerry, they could drop a union leaflet, a union pamphlet. They could. These are union people talking one-on-one. Wouldn't they be put in a word about the union? It was a marvelous organizing possibility, and they fluffed it. They didn't do it. I suggested it. And as a matter of fact, another part of the problem is that they don't take suggestions from outside their circle. It's all in-house, and you can't do it. There's not enough. There's enough new ideas from the inner circle. Now, another problem is a narrowing of leadership and a lack of democracy. Here, they say the 10 largest unions should run the AFL-CIO, pretty much. Hoffa says maybe 10, 15. Stern says we should have 15 to 20 top unions. The fact of the matter is that among the 10 largest unions, there is not a single woman, there is not a single minority, African-American or Latino, and it's all white male and elderly, and they run the show. And when you consider that women represent 43% of the union membership, and here they'll be disenfranchised. These are the proposals that are being put forward. And what I say is, and it's peculiar, that here you have the people who followed up the labor movement for 10 years, who weren't able to increase membership, who had no ideas of how to do it, and now they're in charge, and they still will be in charge. There's something peculiar about that. So these are some of the considerations there. Now, on the specifics, there were two votes, two heated debates, two votes, and as I told you, Stern lost both. But that's minor, actually, because there are going to be skirmishes for the next 5 months. Nothing will be settled. Nothing was settled at Las Vegas. And there will be arguments and battles and changes, twists and turns for the next 5 months. Now, it will lead up to the question of who's going to be in charge. If Hoffa and some of the other top leaders have their way, there won't be any election at all. There will be no need for an election because a couple of the proposals say that only Union International presidents can be on the Executive Council. Well, if you can't be on the, if you're not a union president, you won't be on there. And there is no woman union president among the top 10. So that's the situation. And yet, I want to say one very important thing, positive thing, and it's strongly positive. I found complete unity and commitment on this fight against privatization of Social Security. I have never seen such commitment in the years that I've covered these meetings. They really want to do this. And it's very important. If they win this, they will have momentum for union organizing. And if they carry on this fight in the proper way, they will be increasing the union influence among the millions of unorganized workers.
But do you think, I mean, we've seen in the past, they have small rallies, they just play to the press, they don't get the members out, they don't do things in their own name, they get lost in the Democratic fold. Do you think labor will really start organizing the political front, if it's the political front we're talking about, in their own name?
Well, there is While there's unity on the matter of fighting Bush on this question, there is some disagreement as to what should be the relationship of labor to the Democratic Party. There's a lot of debate and disagreement. Some are calling for independent positions and dealing with Republicans as well. Others say we have to do a better job of working with the Democratic Party. And others say we should take over the Democratic Party. So there's undercurrent of debate on that. Now, will the labor movement be revitalized as a result of this? Now we're not sure. But what I can say is that the situation is far more hopeful than it was, even 4 or 5 months ago. Because this forum, workers now know that they can speak up, and they are going to speak up. 3,000 of them responded to the Sweeney appeal. And more would want to talk. And there is being more discussion about labor problems within the labor movement than ever before. You know, most of union people are cynical, most of them. Cynical, apathetic, passive. They've never responded. They don't know much about what the AFL-CIO is or what it is doing. And I think this period is marking a minor change. Now, it depends. If we have rank and filers who are willing to move up and fight for new leadership, there's a chance for real progress. There is a chance.
For those people who may not realize it, this was a precursor to a larger meeting that will be taking place this summer, where there were a number of unions that challenged the status quo, that challenged John Sweeney in a number of issues. But it still seems that the bottom line is that there are a handful of prominent union officials that one way or the other will maintain their power, and there really won't be any decentralization in that sense. And they don't seem to get the idea that it's not money that creates great organization and upheaval of the working class.
They still think that money will solve the problem. There is no strategic plan. Not even Stern, who's pushing union organizing, has come up with any plan.
What about for Walmart? Because that's been a big issue.
Now,
on
let
the
me
agenda.
Talk about Walmart. Do you know that the United Food and Commercial Workers had been trying to organize Walmart for at least 6-8 years? They were not able to organize even one of the 2,500 Walmart stores. We've got to understand what the problem is there. And when Stern says, let's add $25 million yearly, and that'll organize Walmart, he is sadly mistaken. They have to analyze what the hold is of Walmart on the workers, and that's not too hard to figure out. And they have to adjust their strategy, and they have to have a massive campaign from volunteer organizers.
Well, Harry, afraid we're going to have to leave it there.
All
There's
right.
never quite enough
Can
time.
Can I say one more thing?
Very quickly.
Very quickly.
We need your website also.
Stern says he has 1.8 million workers. Members. He paid dues for 1.35 million members. For 450,000 approximately, he did not pay dues. And I'd like to know, that amounts to $3 million that he shortchanged the AFL-CIO. I'd like an explanation of that.
Okay,
hey,
well,
Harry, if people want to know more about your views on the labor movement, what's your website so people can go and
all right.
read your weekly column?
That's very good. My website is www.laboreducator.org.
Well, make sure, if you just plug in Labor Educator, you will find Harry Kelber. And he has been, obviously, with the labor movement for a long time. And the old adage, organize, 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 that's where it's at. Thank you for being with us. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Let's put the movement back in the labor movement.
My daddy was a brakeman in Pullman. In the strike of 94, he never knew nothing about the union, but started learning when they hit that door.
got to roll, 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 roll with the union. You got to roll, 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 roll out with the wind. Show the folks how to tell the friends from the labor fakers. Put your trust in your class, boy, and know that you're bound to win. Says, I'm gonna roll, 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 rollin' with the union. I'm gonna roll, 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 roll out with the wind. I show the folks how to tell the friends from the labor fakers. I put my trust in my class, boy.